Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This is ESPN 97.5, KFNC, and 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Brought to you by Zadda Jewelers.
Don't sweat the technique.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, 2 in the books, 1 to go, final hour of the show gets underway right now. Hive Live with BMAC and Blank on a Monday. Jeremy out on vacation today, including mean texts that we won't read that were not nice. We wish Jeremy a very, very enjoyable vacation. He works hard all year.
Well, we can just read mean texts about Jeremy.
I just can't do it. I know he loves that stuff.
Not for you?
Yeah, I can't do it. So let's get back to a little Astros conversation because some interesting stuff coming up, and you brought up something that I think is a good dialogue, and it came off something that Barry and I went back and forth on 2 weeks ago in terms of people. It's just very polarizing. John Singleton's a guy that when we look at the Astros and we look at their first base situation, Singleton's a guy that a lot of people just can't wrap their head around saying could be the guy that plays first base for you for the entire rest of the season. Some people say he's good enough. Other people say if this is a playoff World Series caliber team, he can't be your starting first baseman. What is your say in terms of where are you on John Singleton?
Yeah, I'm with the side that would say he can't be the starting first baseman on a World Series caliber team. I think they can make the playoffs with him. Ideally, he's a bat off the bench and a platoon. And I know the argument to that because I've heard you made is he plays better when he's playing regularly, which makes sense. I think a lot of players would because they build up a rhythm, they get their timing and whatnot. It makes sense. But, I mean, look at the last – I mean, certainly the series in Seattle where he went 1-for-12, no runs, no ribbies, 4 strikeouts. He extended past to the next game and he didn't do anything. So, these last 4 games – he's 1-for-13 with 5 strikeouts.
He faced good pitching.
And I know right before this 4-game stretch where he was 1-for-13 with 5 strikeouts.
He was on a heater.
He was on a heater. But that's kind of the thing, though. That kind of highlights the point. Like, he is someone that has definitely shown more capability than I thought he had when the Astros kind of started down this road with him. Because Jose Abreu was such a disaster. Because I kind of had the old Singleton in my mind. He's certainly proven to be better than that. But I don't see him as a guy that I would want to count on in October to be able to deliver the kind of consistent at-bats that they're going to need from that position to win. And that's kind of the point. Like, he had the great stretch this month up until the last 4 games, but we still see these stretches like the last 4 where he completely falls apart. That leaves me with the question, is he good enough to win a title? I don't think he is.
Like so many guys that we've talked about, whether it be how's Loperfido going to be in his first time in the big leagues, Chaz McCormick coming off last year to this year. Even for the most part, we knew Bregman, we had questions. We know Bregman most years levels off, and we know who he is and what his mean has been, as opposed to some guys that we just don't know. And that's why I was very skeptical of going back to Montero getting the big contract. That was his best year ever. And I was very adamant that he didn't deserve the long-term big money. But when you look at Chaz, I had my reservation saying that might be his career year a year ago. But they put all the eggs in that basket, didn't go get a bat. So I understand where there's reservation. The other thing that helps him that doesn't hurt the that hurts the argument is a lot of people are just saying he's better than Abreu. So therefore, they're okay with him at first base. And that's where you got to kind of draw the line and say, hey, look, we're not just trying to make the playoffs here. This is a team that has higher aspirations. So the way that you worded the question is right. If you believe this is a playoff World Series caliber team, is John Singleton good enough? And is he the guy that you could see help getting them to that? And I'm with you then. At that point, that's where I would say, I can't say that he's good enough to be a guy if you have World Series aspirations, as opposed to a team just trying to make the playoffs. But we've heard the names before. We've heard Pete Alonso. We've heard about Vlad Jr. But the bigger thing now is there's a new name in the mix that I really like, and John Heyman had that this comment over the weekend.
They're certainly looking at first base, and they were interested certainly if Christian Walker or Pete Alonso was going to be available. It doesn't appear that they're going to go anywhere. Those teams are in contention right now. But there's another guy who can play first, did play first in New York the last couple of days, Isak Paredes. And I don't think this name's really been out there, but this is a potential fit for the Astros. And, you know, he really works a number of levels for them. First of all, pull hitter. I mean, this is the most pull hitter in baseball, right? Every single one of his 60-plus home runs has been pulled. So Crawford boxes meet. Isak Paredes, also, he has three more years to go, and he's really a third baseman. He's playing first, a third baseman, and, I mean, you know as well as I do, it doesn't appear they are very likely to be able to keep Bregman.
So he could Bregman shift over to third once
shift
Bregman
over to
leaves.
Third. So this is actually why, I mean, no perfect fit is a cliche. This is a pretty good fit.
I love this. I love everything about this, because we know that Tampa Bay normally is willing to deal. The fact that you have him for 3 years of team control after this is phenomenal. The fact that whether you keep Bregman somehow, even on a short-term deal, and he can play, he can be the first baseman we just got done talking about, and Singleton can just play behind him is great. But if he has to move over to third base next year because Bregman walks, you've got your built-in replacement already, and you can find other people to play first base, whether you get Yiner to play it or you find someone in your system or you go outside the building, because you're going to have money to play with if he walks. This is such a phenomenal, multifaceted answer to the question. It may not be the biggest sexy name like Alonso or Vlad Jr. or guys like that, but it seems like Heyman's right, and not a lot of people feel like he's right all the time, but this is one that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love it from just like looking at it from the on-field perspective. I mean, he was over an 800 OPS last year. His OPS is over 800 this year. He had just over 30 home runs last year. He's on pace for, I think, 28 home runs this year. I mean, the player, especially when you factor in the versatility of him maybe sliding over to third where his more natural position to Bregman leaves, it makes so much sense on the field. He's got power. His slash line's good. He can play multiple positions. He helps you out for not only this year at first, but the long term if you don't keep Bregman. My question is, with Paredes, is more so that – I don't think you can afford to both trade for him and the level of starting pitcher you want. Like, maybe you can. Maybe Dana Brown has some wizardry up his sleeve. He can turn you know, a couple of trades and pull off a magic trick to be able to make both of these work with the limited assets they have. Because, I mean, obviously, you look at almost any prospect rankings list or prospect like overall farm evaluation, the Astros are, you know, bottom five-ish. I don't know if they have the assets to be able to go pull off a trade for a pitcher like to the level of a Tyler Anderson or an Eric Fetty or Cal Quantrill and go get Paredes. Yeah. That's the problem. So I love Paredes, I want him. If Dana Brown can pull off the magic trick and get both, absolutely, sign me up. I'm willing to pay the price. We had this conversation a couple weeks ago. I don't care about mortgaging the farm system right now because I'm trying to maximize this next couple years. I know Jeremy would disagree with some of that, but I think you'd be forced to choose, and that's where the problem comes
in. But this is tailor-made. This is like in so many different facets. Like,
he's
a pull hitter with
but
the
boxes. But if you got to choose.
He can play both corner infield positions. He's got multiple years of team control. He kind of keeps the window open and gives you so many options, and he's got power in his bat.
Absolutely power. 31
but
home runs.
Tampa's done this a time or two. This is what they do. They're going to look for, if they're going to part ways with him, and I looked, like, he's leading their team in home runs. He's leading their teams in RBIs. He's going to be a guy that's going to be costly, and you're right. At that point, if you're going to go and make a costly move to get him, you better be damn sure you're getting Verlander back. Garcia is going to be somewhat of a contributor. Whether it's Bloss or someone else, you've got options to go to a six-man rotation. Or they're going to be interested in, and it, like you said, it's going to cost a pretty penny. And if Loperfido or, you know, Leon and guys like that, if they don't go in the first deal, they're definitely going to have to be going in the second deal to try and get you a starting pitcher.
Yeah, because when you look at their assets they have that I think it could pull in a type of a player of this caliber. I mean, you're talking about, obviously, Loperfido, I think, is a name that would be brought up from the team that you're calling. Jake Bloss, obviously, Bryce Matthews, Jacob Melton. I mean, there's maybe a few more. Maybe you could get up to five or six of those type level assets. I think Paredes is probably going to cost three of those. So, I mean, maybe you have enough left over to then go get a starting pitcher. But if you're doing both, you're basically stripping your farm system of all your major all your major prospects and future assets and really limiting yourself to what you'd have available for, you know, 2026 and 2027 that's not already on your major league roster. I'm fine with that because, as I said before, I'm not really looking past the next 2 to 3 years anyway. I know Jeremy would disagree with that. We can't, obviously, we'll have to have that conversation if
but
they make the move when
he gets back.
I've
been on that side of it, too. I've been on the same side as you is that, look, there is a way, and yes, you kind of have to have a delicate balance of both, but there is a way that you can give away your prospects, but you can still keep the window open to be as competitive as anybody in baseball. And if that wasn't the case, the Dodgers wouldn't be doing what they do every year, and some of the teams that are creative in the way they do it.
And the Dodgers trade away tons of prospects every year. Yeah. I'm not even as concerned about walking the line. I'm really just focused on this next 3 years. But certainly, it's possible. But if Dana Brown could pull off the magic trick, I would definitely be in favor of adding both Paredes. I think he's the perfect bat to add. Like, that side of the equation, adding the bat, fixing first base, if you don't believe in Singleton like I don't, I think Paredes completely solves that side of the equation of what the Astros have to do at the trade deadline. The question then becomes, do you still have enough to get the type of starting pitcher you want? I don't think they do. I think you're going to have to choose. And if that's the case, I would choose the starting pitcher for all the reasons we've talked about and then pass on Paredes. But, if Dana Brown could pull off that 1-2 combo, that would be – To the moon, to use GameStop terminology, that would be amazing.
No question about it. I think that would be the ultimate if he was able to do all that. Now, there is a name that's out there in the meantime that you just got done seeing, and Astros fans need to remember this, but I mentioned this briefly at the start of the show. The fact that the Mariners went and pulled the plug completely on Ty France after the series this weekend was amazing to me because it was already that Blummer and TK were talking about he'd never hit ninth before. They moved him to the nine hole. He hasn't been what he had been 2 years ago when he was an all-star, but he is a proven veteran. He costs you nothing. You can go get him right now and see if, at least until you make a move or figure out if you can make a big move. To me, it's worth kicking the tires on a Ty France. And if you know anything about players that feel scorned by the team that let them go, they'd love to get back at the team that let them go and be as close to them as possible. This would be, I think, an easy, easy, soft transition for the Astros.
If it costs the Astros nothing, then I can't be mad at it because Singleton's not the long-term answer. You know, playing Loperfido or Dubon at first base, to me, is not the long-term answer. So I don't mind them necessarily kicking the tires on Ty France if it cost them nothing with his release from the Mariners. But, I mean, he was great in 2021 and 2022, but you look at the last 2 years, last year and this year, I mean, last year he was, despite a career high in games played and, you know, plate appearances and a bat, he was 12 home runs. His OPS was barely over 7. This year he's hitting .223 with a .662 OPS. The numbers over the last year and a half have just been awful. Like, if Ty France is what he has been this year and last year, he's not an improvement over Singleton. So I guess the question from the scouting department and for Dana Brown is, do you think he has the capability of turning the clock back to 2021 and 2022? Because that player in those 2 years would be a great addition at first base, and he'd be the answer. But the last 18 months of Ty France has been worse than John Singleton.
But I watched, at least unlike a lot of guys we've watched where we say they're washed, he can catch up to a fastball still. You know, he's coming off a heel injury. He's had some injuries as well to deal with. I think Seattle is showing its desperation, and I think that from an Astros perspective, because we just got done talking about the lack of assets to go and make a lot of big moves, in the meantime, you should be kicking it. Look, you went out and brought back Aledmys Diaz. Now, he may not be a factor, but the fact that he got let go, he knows your system, he knows everything about your organization, Joe Espada knows him, and if a guy like him and a guy like Ty France are like in your AAA and or at your minor league complex getting ready until you make a move, or if you can make a move or not, it's a nice backup plan to have.
Yeah, I don't mind them trying it out. I'm just kind of – if they did it, I would come into it with very low expectations because, I mean, not only the last 18 months have his offensive numbers been dreadful. I mean, he's – I mean, like I said, he was 703 OPS last year, 662 this year. Beyond that, I mean, Seattle's, as we talked about at the top of the – well, not the top of the show. The top of the show was all about water parks. But as we talked about, like, the 330 segment, I mean, Seattle's just completely deprived of offense. It's a team that's basically kind of the inverse of what the Colorado Rockies are. They can't – because partly because of the ballpark factors, partly because they haven't drafted the right players or developed the right players. They just have an offense that's completely putrid. So if that team – especially considering how good Ty France was in 2021 and 2022, if that team, so devoid of offense, so desperate for any sort of bat that can make a difference, is willing to let go of a guy that was that good in 2021 and 2022, kind of tells me they believe he's done. Or at least they don't think they can turn him around quickly.
Look at what's his name from the Nats that just went to the Mariners and was hot as all get out for the series. And since he's been with the Mariners, center field, right field.
I'm drawing a blank.
He played in the series this weekend, and he's been fantastic since he got out of Washington. I mean, that's the kind of thing where you say, okay, if I can find a guy that gets out of, like, a situation where he thinks there's no end to it or no winning situation for him, and they're like, demoting him in the lineup. And
Victor Robles?
Yeah, Robles.
Okay,
so
yeah.
It could be a situation where he could be a guy that kind of gets a fresh start and realizes, hey, I'm on a winning squad. I don't have – because he was relied upon pretty heavily to be a middle-of-the-order big bat. And if he's failing, then a lot of more extra pressure on him. Get him in a situation like Houston where he doesn't have to be the biggest batter two in the lineup. Get him where he's familiar with the team. He's in a winning environment. And give him a chance because I don't think he's not catching up to fastballs. I don't think that's the big problem with some of these guys like Abreu and a Goldschmidt type that we've seen that have been a possibility. So we can kick this around after the break. There's another situation I want to bring up to you as well because it's something that the Astros hopefully can address before the deadline. It's the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Rolling through the final hour of the show, it's B-Mac and Blank as Branham is off this week enjoying some vacation time, and much well-deserved. He is cruising, and we are continuing on. And we were talking about the fact that the first base position could be a position of interest. Look, John Heyman had an idea in Isak Paredes as a guy that might be a really good fit for the Astros. I would be all in being as interested as I could be in that, but I think starting pitching still ends up being your number one priority. The other thing that's killing this team, as we talked about Singleton, is the fact that, again, yesterday, and when we did the good, bad, and the ugly, I mentioned, look, Seth Martinez's performance wasn't great, but it was also because that bullpen has been taxed. And part of the reason that it's been taxed is there's a guy making $11 million a year that is unplayable right now, and it looks like there's no kind of trust level with Joe Espada and the coaches of this team to put Rafael Montero into the ballgame. You're paying him a ton of money to sit dormant and not screw up and lose you a game. And that is killing the rest of your bullpen. So the big thing is whether you can't put him in high leverage or any leverage situations or just mop-up duty, the fact that he wasn't a guy that you could at least give the baseball to and at least understand that he can keep you in a ball game tells you that until they make a move or two and try to either get rid of him or they bring in guys that can do what he does better, he's going to be on this roster, and that is a huge thorn in your side right now.
There are certainly multiple situations in this series where if Montero was 2022 Montero, he would have pitched.
Yep.
Like, I mean, the role that he was when they won the World Series, that was a role they needed. Obviously, you needed any time, but they could have used it in this series, especially on Sundays. So, yeah, he's basically just a dead spot on the roster. I mean, he's taking up a roster spot because his contract is $11 million. That's because his ERA since June is over 8.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You're going to keep him on the books through the deadline because you may be able to dump him. Maybe you have to pay some of his salary, but there might be a way so that you're not completely on the hook for the rest of it because they already know how much they had to eat in the Abreu deal. But this is the second of the Crane Gang deals that is killing them. And it's not just killing them financially. And I get it. They want to try and use them in the deadline to possibly be able to make a move. But if you can't unload them by the deadline.
You can't move them in a deal, though. No one's going to take that.
He got moved the last time when he was going to be DFA'd from Seattle. But now he's got a bigger contract. But if you pay some of that money just to get rid of him.
You'd have to eat probably, what, three-fourths of it?
Fine. But I think that's what they're doing because they want to try and save as much face as possible before they have to admit they blew another one and that the Crane Gang completely just peed down their leg twice in moves that they made without a general manager in the organization. And so I think that we're stuck with this decision of him just rotting away, wasting our time in the bullpen until after the deadline. And then after the deadline, if he's still on the roster, they're going to have to move on from him because yesterday is a prime example. You're right. Taylor Scott has in a lot of ways become what Montero's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But he's even when he's not in the game this weekend, he's warming up and getting hot to not be called on or to be called on for a batter or two, which in a lot of ways means he's still got all the way up, which means you can't keep throwing him out there. Kind of what you had to do with Seth Martinez. That's why it's so important that right after the deadline, if he's still on this roster and you haven't moved him, he's got to go.
Yeah, you know what's so weird with Montero? And, I mean, obviously I want him gone. I mean, again, 8.49 ERA since June 1st. But when you look at his – because obviously he was great in 2022. Start of 2023, he was terrible. But then you look at his second half of the year. July 1st to the end of the season last year on October 1st, his ERA was 2.91. That's great. 2.91, you would absolutely take it. I mentioned several times now, since June 1st, his ERA is 8.49. Before that, first half of the year, it was 3.04. These had two-month stretches both last year and this year amongst just being awful where he's been nearly as good as he was in 2022. So it's very puzzling. You might be right in the fact that they're kind of leaving him off the field so that he doesn't ruin any minuscule amount of trade value he has, which is, God, it'd be hard to imagine he has any. But maybe, I think we pondered this last year when he was pitching well in the summers, like maybe they're hoping they could put him in these like fifth inning situations, these low leverage situations to improve his numbers and then use that to increase the ability to move him. I'm surprised they maybe haven't even tried that because I mean, when you look at that ERA, it's just, I can't imagine, even if you're eating three fourths of it, why anyone would even want him on the roster. Because even if you're eating three fourths of it, the other team would still have to have him on their roster, and he's been horrible. So I think it's a lose-lose situation. There's not really a right answer with Montero, but they're going to have to move on because literally, whether it be someone at AAA, whether it be, any of these names we talked about where they can move at the deadline, basically, anyone would be better than Rafael Montero right now.
No question about it. Even if you want Taylor Scott to be the replacement for Montero, you still got to get someone else.
Name a guy in AAA I would rather have him right now than Rafael Montero.
And I like what King brings to the table most of the time, and he's left-handed.
Caleb Ort, he had that one game appearance in the Rangers series.
We talked about
Ort
has a live arm. But even if you're going to go out, look, I love Chad Green. And Chad Green with the Yankees was unbelievable. He's in a bad situation because Toronto's not good, but he's having a good year. But there's going to be plenty of people going for him. I've been a big fan and I've been an advocate for Chafin in the past from the Tigers. They're not going anywhere. Maybe they're willing to cut loose him and he's a veteran guy. Contract's a little bigger. Maybe they're willing to get rid of him, but everybody wants pitching. So those are the two guys that actually strike a nerve with me to say I would be interested, but at what price? Because especially if we're talking about a starting pitcher, whether you get another bat or not, you only have so much to give, and you're limited in what you can give against just about any other team in baseball.
That's the problem, because there's a few more names. I'm with you. I like Chad Green and Andrew Chafin. I'd also throw in Carlos Estevez and Dylan Floro. Estevez of the Angels and Dylan Floro of the Nationals, previously with the Marlins, I believe. I mean, but any of these names you mentioned, because these are kind of the higher end. These aren't, ninth inning. Well, Estevez is a ninth inning guy. But these aren't really, well-established closers that are going to cost top of the market. But they're still big enough to where if you want to go out and get Paredes, if you want to go out and get, name a starting pitcher, you're not going to have enough assets to get one of these names. So Dana Brown would have to dig further down the list of available bullpen arms to names we're not talking about right now. And we'll have to ask the question if that name would even be good enough to make a difference, because the first, five spots in your bullpen are pretty much already settled with Seth Martinez, Taylor Green, and then, Taylor Scott. Taylor with an E, Taylor Scott, and then, of course, Presley Abreu and Hader. So I mean, especially when you get to the postseason, I mean, you're 6, 7, 8, 9 is pretty much already settled, and you're hoping
plus if you get a starting pitcher, five, the thought is probably going to become playoff time. That starting pitcher is probably going to be in your bullpen as well.
Yeah, exactly. So whoever you add, I think I don't think they're going to go, especially if they want Paredes and a starting pitcher. They're not going to go for one of the relief arms that we just mentioned because one, they're not going to have enough assets left over, and two, whoever they add, because you're going down a starter in the postseason, because you know you've already got your 6, 7, 8, 9 guys basically settled with Taylor Scott, and then the trio of back of the back of the bullpen arms, you're really not going to have room for this guy that they're adding on. So I don't think they're going to be willing to pay the same price because the need isn't as great as it is as first base and with the starting pitcher.
All right, let's get to Wheel of Bits. It's coming up next, as we normally do on a Monday in the final half hour of the show. We're going to take a quick break, come back with the final 30 minutes. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Guys, you know you've heard about it before, but we've been famous for this and we're bringing it back. It is Rock the Mic, and you can be a part of it. But if you want to be a part of it, time is running out, and you have got to be involved by getting yourself a 3 to 5 minute video. You can do it and submit it, and it can be done by yourself or with a partner. But we know that how you like to listen to us and always tell us how to do our jobs. Now you can actually try and do it for yourself, because Rock the Mic is back, and all you have to do is go to get the chance to receive a podcast and be a host on our ESPN YouTube channel. You have to win the contest. Therefore, that 3 to 5 minute video that you do, you need to submit it to rockthemic@gmail.com. The winner's going to be announced live at our finale on August 23rd at Carbach Brewery. So get your entries in now, because they got to be in by August the 2nd. Therefore, whether it's you solo or you with a partner, get your best Rock the Mic video together, 3 to 5 minutes long, and submit it to rockthemic975@gmail.com. Winners, again, are going to be announced at a live finale where you might have to perform. But if you think you know this and you got this, let's see what you got and rock the mic. All right, before we get to any other topics, Keith has been standing by. This is always interesting. Keith, what do you got for us today?
Hey, guys. Tuning in a little bit late, but obviously, you know, in the last 24 hours, Dodgers, you know, released Paxton, and the Mariners, you know, DFA Ty France. It seems like these plays and these moves kind of fit well into what the Astros are looking to upgrade. You know, like I would say Ty France is marginally better than John Singleton. You can DFA Cabbage. And Paxton has 8 wins and has pitched well for the Dodgers this year in a surprise DFA. He'd fit well in the rotation easily. So the Astros could add these two guys and go through the waiver process without having to make a trade and give up prospects. Am I right?
No, Keith, you're absolutely right, because I thought the guys on Twitch were kidding, bringing up Paxton as a potential guy that the Astros – look, I'm all about kick the tires guy. I've been that way before, especially if there's no cost associated with it. If you're a team as good as the Astros and you have needs that you are trying to fill, and you know that your farm system is less than a full cupboard to deal with in terms of assets, these are the kind of guys that you can find lightning in a bottle with. Maybe not all three guys like Aledmys Diaz and France and Paxton. Paxton's a guy that I just saw in the last week pitch fairly well for the Dodgers. And so it was shocking to me yesterday when the Mariners let go of France. And that's even more shocking to me, the Dodgers, who are pitching starved for this year and are supposed to be big buyers looking for starting pitching to try and salvage what they think is a World Series season. For them to let go of an arm like that, a guy the Astros have been familiar with, he's not long-term for you, but if you're looking – look, do I believe more in James Paxton with the defense and lineup of the Astros than I do a blue ball or a Bloss? Yes. The answer to me is yes, Brian.
I don't want to poo-poo it, because like you, I would kick the tires because it doesn't really cost you much at this point. But when you look at his numbers, I mean, this year – he hasn't been. He's not bad, but 4.43 ERA. His WHIP is 1.4. That WHIP is certainly not very good. Last year with Boston, 4.50 ERA, WHIP was 1.3. Neither one of those numbers are very good. Didn't pitch in 2022, 2021, only started one game. I mean, you have to go back to 2019 before you could say Jane Paxton was a plus starter. So, I mean, 2019, we didn't know what COVID was. When the last time, right. the last time James Paxton was a good starting pitcher, we didn't know what COVID was. So it's been a long-ass time. I wouldn't kick the tires on it, but I think you would have to set the bar really low because he's 35. He hasn't been very good since the 2019 season. So I don't mind kicking the tires on James Paxton, bringing him in, see what he's got. Maybe, I don't know, it's a minor league deal. Maybe see if he can get himself going in Sugarland, then you call him up. But if you go with James Paxton or you go with Ty France, I'm in favor of both, trying both of them out. I wouldn't make that move with the idea of that's my move. I would make the move and hope they can get it back, and if they do, it's a bonus. But I wouldn't let that keep me from going out to pursue other options like, you know, Fetty or Tyler Anderson or Paredes, like we've talked about in today's show. Because I really think France and Paxton have a lot to prove before you could count on them on a regular basis.
I just think that when you're again, I'm with you in the fact that I'm not saying this is what you're going to do instead of making a move at the deadline.
It had to be in addition to,
right?
Yeah.
But I'm saying, you want as many insurance policies and possibilities as you can possibly create for yourself
with a team that
has limitations. So therefore, because you're limited in what you can give and how many moves you can make, if I can bring in these three veteran guys, and even if one of them ends up turning out for you, whether it's short or, you know, for the rest of the season, you have to explore it. You have to be the team that goes, because you're going to be attracted to them. Obviously, you're a winning team. You're on the cusp of winning the division. You're going to be a playoff team. There's opportunity because you know that there's openings that and positions of need that need to be filled. The worst you could do is say, at the end of the day, it didn't work out. But the best that could happen, if one or two of those guys turn out to be decent, then you don't have to do as much before the deadline. Because I'm with you. They have to make moves, and I think multiple moves at the deadline. But I think this may circumvent having to do one of whatever position these guys play.
Yeah, maybe. But the problem is, like with Paxton and Ty France, like if they go to, let's say you sign them on a minor league deal, and you try to give them a look to figure out if they can kind of turn around the season, you're not going to get the answer on that before the deadline. So I mean, that goes to my point of, this would be complete, you know, icing on top of the cake, you know, cherry on top of the sundae if they can get it going. I would be completely willing to bring them in, give them a look, see if they can turn it around, because James Paxton has had really great success in the past, but it hasn't been since 2019. And Ty France has had really great success in the past, but it hasn't been since 2022. So I wouldn't bring them in, especially Paxton being age 35, and maybe he's just on the natural decline of a guy at that age. I wouldn't bring them in with the idea of that's the answer. I know that's not what you're saying, but I wouldn't bring them in with the idea of that being the answer. One, because they haven't been good, and two, because they can't prove to you they're good before the deadline. So completely icing on the cake, that's fine, but you still have to make your other moves.
Right, but what I'm saying is, in terms of a guy like Paxton, I'm not looking at him being the long-term solution. I'm looking at a guy that in his last three starts, two of them he gave you five innings and gave up two runs and three runs. One, he had seven strikeouts. To where, if you say that there's a guy, do you think that he's better capable for a 5-6 inning start to give you a better result than Bloss?
I would say so.
And it doesn't cost you anything, and he's stretched out and ready to where it gets you quicker to a 6-man rotation and to rest some of the other arms we're talking about that are going to be guys you rely on. And you can and you can still make a move. And at the end of the move, if you make a move, he's ready now, right? To where he's ready now. If you make a move, you can cut him because it doesn't cost you anything. Or maybe he's better than Montero, and if Montero goes, you can say, if we looked for one guy to empty the tank for three outs in an inning, this is a guy that's got decent enough stuff that could possibly do it for us. You have options with him, and you can just send him on his way if you do make a move. But if you can't make all the moves you're trying to make, at least this is a guy that I feel more confident in than Bloss.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When you make the case that way, James Paxton versus Bloss, I'm absolutely on board, and I'm on board in either way. And just at least with the idea of kicking the tires and seeing if he can get back to his 2019 form. My expectations from below, because of, you know, the 4.43 ERA and the WHIP that's damn near 1.5, which is awful, suggests that his ERA actually might even be a little bit lucky, even at 4.4. But when you put him specifically against Jake Blas, who you can't really depend to give you even four innings, I mean, he hasn't really shown that at the major league level, I'd rather have James Paxton than Jake Blas. So I think that's fine if that gets you to the six-man rotation, but I would set the expectations low, and that I would hope that the Astros would still go after starting pitchers on the trade market with the same vigor they would have before they got James Paxton.
Yeah, no, I think that that's why if you're Dana Brown and you're doing your job, this is part of doing your job to where we know how many different moves are going to be scrutinized because they cost you something, financially, trades, whatever. These may not cost you, but it can be a difference maker for you because it can be the difference between being a playoff team or winning in the division. It can be a difference between having your pitchers at full strength or being gassed by the time they get to the playoffs. So for me, this is a no-brainer. As much as Ty France would be someone I'd look at, Paxton's a guy to me that I bring in right now to say he can at least bridge the gap short term for me.
Yeah, no, I'd be fine with that. As a short term, you know, bridge to get you to the six man rotation because you don't want Jake Blas really being that guy. Feels like we're picking on Jake Blas a lot in this segment. I don't mean to, because
long term, I believe in him.
Long term, yeah, he's just, you know, he's a guy that was drafted last year and he skipped AAA. He's just not ready for this moment. So James Paxton as basically the sixth man in the six man rotation as a guy to get you through the regular season, so you're not overly taxing guys like Ronel Blanco and Spencer Arrighetti that are going to set new innings highs. I'm absolutely fine with it, but again, tempered expectations, and I would hope that Dana Brown wouldn't let this signing of James Paxton, if they do it, dial down his desperateness to get a starting pitcher at the deadline, even a single percentage point. Because to me, Paxton is only, because of what the ERA and the WHIP says, because of his age, because of he hasn't been good since 2019, it, to me, is only a six starter to get you through the rest of the regular season, and not someone I would look at as the big move at the deadline that would improve your odds of winning a title. Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. All right, so we got to get to the car wreck of the day before we get out of here. One segment to go on the show. If you got a car wreck and we haven't mentioned yet, give it to us. 713-780-3776. You can reach us by text, you can call us, you can hit us up on social media. Back for the final segment, it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Well, you ask, and sometimes you receive, and sometimes you receive sooner than you were expecting, but not only is the lineup up and out tonight, but there's an interesting twist. We were just talking about the three guys and one already in the fold in Aledmys Diaz that I suggested the Astros should go get, and lo and behold, Aledmys Diaz is not only on the active roster, he is starting at first base tonight, as you hear Spencer Arrighetti's music in the background. We'll get to that in a minute. But BMAC, the Astros have not only activated Victor Caratini and sent down Caesar Salad, they've activated Aledmys Diaz, and he's starting at first base tonight. They've optioned Gray Kessinger to Sugarland, and they've DFA'd David Hensley. So there's multiple moves there as it relates to Arrighetti on the mound and a lineup against the Oakland A's.
Yeah, so the lineup, as you said, is out. This was as of 14 minutes ago. Astros going against Hulk Hogan Harris tonight in Oakland. Jose Altuve leading off, Bregman second, Alvarez third, Yonder Diaz hitting cleanup in the fourth spot, Pena hitting fifth, Jake Myers hitting sixth, Dubon back in the lineup, didn't play much in Seattle. He is hitting seventh. Aledmys Diaz, the newly called up reemergence of Aledmys Diaz, hitting eighth and playing first base. And then Chaz McCormick in the ninth spot playing center field, or playing left field.
It's the revenge and redemption tour. You're going to get Aledmys Diaz to get his old team tonight. He's probably going to go deep.
Oh, you're predicting a home run? I usually just predict the starting pitcher's line.
We're doing role reversal. You get to do the pitcher.
Oh, okay. You're predicting Aledmys Diaz. I predict Spencer Arrighetti.
Aledmys Diaz is going to get at least one hit tonight, and I would not be surprised if it's a home run or an extra base hit.
Okay. And, I'm for that.
And I'm
obviously.
When they signed him, I thought it was a sneaky move that I liked, and I'm hoping that it works out.
Okay, and so I will go ahead and give the prediction for Spencer Arrighetti going against the Oakland Triple A's or Single A's. That is, I'm going to go. Usually he dominates the bad team, so I'm going to go 6 innings, 2 earned runs.
I'll take that.
Yeah, I definitely would. I mean, I guess the A's, you could probably maybe hold out for more because it is the A's, but I would absolutely take that.
There you go. All right, we got to get to our car wreck of the day. We're running short on time, so let's get to it. Strike up the bend.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
You know, you prick. Where's my money?
Which one do you want?
This is the car wreck of the day.
All right, car wreck of the day. As we're short on time, there has to be one leader in the clubhouse nominee. Oh, Michael Kay, Yankees TV announcer, Astro hater, even if it's a former Astro. And boy, oh boy, he's the no fun zone right now and the fun police.
You lose it. I mean, celebrate when you win it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're acting like it's Mardi Gras in that dugout. You're losing the game. But I asked Aaron Boone about it today. And he said, it's a new world.
Mm-hmm.
He says he tries to look away.
Michael Kay, after ex-Astro Jose Siri, trailing in the game, hit a bomb, celebrated it a little bit off the, around the bases and in the dugout.
Oh, he definitely celebrated. But the thing I mean, Michael Kay is obviously being, you know, old man yells at sky. But, yes, they were losing. But it wasn't like it was 20-1 and it was the ninth inning. It was the fifth inning and they're down 4. The home run made it 4-1. I mean, okay, I get don't celebrate when you're down, but it's not like the game was over and he was celebrating down 19-2 in the eighth or ninth inning.
I think he's also ticked off because I think that was the second home run of the series for Siri against the Yankees.
I think a lot of teams hate Jose Siri.
Yeah, and he showed it out pretty good the last time too, but you're right, it's get off my lawn guy, and that's who Michael Kay is.
Yeah, he definitely is.
I mean, when he got mad when they were in the Mets-Yankees series, when his flagship had a commercial to celebrate the Mets,
100%. Yeah, he gets mad at a lot of things. We got to get to Glenn Davis and Soccer Matters. But what is our car record there? You want to say? I know we could say Michael Kay, but I think we got to give a nod to Team USA for barely beating South Sudan by 1 point.
And then they beat Germany today by 4.
Yeah, I think Team USA, the men's Team USA basketball team, is going to get car wreck of the day.
There you go. Glenn Davis coming up next. A Dynamo road trip breakdown, former Canadian national goalkeeper Paul Dolan, and All-Star Games relevance. Today we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. Best in the business, Glenn Davis coming up next. For Brian McDonald, I'm Joel Blank. We have had a great time on Monday with you guys in the Hive. Keep it alive tomorrow. Barry Laminack joins me. B-Mac will be behind the glass. Have a great night, everybody.
Listening to ESPN 97.5.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.